And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. Make sure you look them up on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L, Athletic, singular. Again, F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L, Athletic. You can also find them on their website at physicalathletics.com. My next guest, she joins me via the Sun City Prep Academy hotline. Person that I'm a very big fan of. She's doing tremendous things. She's a revolutionary in the youth soccer game. She's literally changing the game. Love what she's about. She was one of the very first guests I had in mind that I wanted to have on this podcast. And she's the founder of the Soccer Parenting Organization, which we're going to dive into, and she's going to tell us a lot about. Sky Eddie Bruce. Sky, how are you?
Great, Hector. Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Likewise. Excited to have you here. One of the very first questions that I ask everybody here, especially because we try not to make it exclusively about the pandemic, about COVID, but it kind of, you can't ignore it either, obviously. Describe to us your experience in leading your organization of soccer parenting, as well as your family during this pandemic.
Yeah, so it has been, just a remarkable year in many levels. I've been really fortunate personally that our family has stayed healthy, and we've actually, kind of had some great time together and bonding, and I've been able to kind of see the positive side of all of that just within my family structure. My daughter came home from college for a little while. She's up at school in Boston at Emerson. And so that when they got shut down, it was great to have her home for me as a parent, like some extra bonus time being a mom to a 20-year-old. And my coaching, again, here I'm in Richmond, Virginia. So the coaching work that I'm doing for the Richmond Strikers, I have a U10 girls team, and we were pretty much able to keep our whole season intact, with a lot of really clear and well implemented sort of precautions, if you will. And for soccer parenting, I am an optimistic introvert. And so I took advantage of all of this time and I rallied and we pivoted in many ways. Although we were already doing online, so much online webinars, like I've been doing webinars and Zooms for years.
Right.
And so everyone else figured that one out. But for the most part, I think that it was a year of really exciting growth where we're able to really serve the needs of parents and provide a really valuable tool to clubs who are looking to engage with parents. So, and then sort of secondary to that is that clubs who didn't have time on the field, their leadership was really interested in providing other services and growing. And so we were able to develop some really strong relationships and partnerships with many, many clubs around the country who were trying to do something new and different, and now have put in best practices that will stay in place even post-COVID times.
Great. That's a lot of good stuff. That's awesome.
Great. I mean, I know I feel so grateful because I know that this has been just a really tremendously difficult time for many, many people. I've certainly experienced that on an ancillary level with friends and such, but we've been good.
Right. Yeah. That's good to hear. Okay. So your organization, Soccer Parenting, for our listeners here, it's a pretty broad audience, whether it's coaches, student athletes, and definitely parents who most likely have never heard of it, or have maybe just kind of in the background heard something about it and they're triggered a little bit, but they don't know anything about it. Tell us more about it and kind of the genesis of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that probably the best place to start is that I am trying to make youth soccer better. And that's the vision of our company. And I am a former player. I played collegiately. I was an All-American in college. I played professionally. I am a B licensed coach. I'm a coach educator for U.S. soccer. I've worked for many of the top goalkeeper camps in the country for many years as a director. So I had some great mentors in the game. And so I sort of filled the soccer, resume from a player and a coach. And then as my kids were coming up in the game, I really started to be acutely aware of the stress that we often feel as soccer parents. I thought I was going to be like, this is going to be cake for me to be a soccer parent. And I am telling you, it was some of the hardest times for me personally. And so I recognize that if this is hard for me, it's got to be really, really hard for others as well. And so that's part of the issue I'm trying to solve is make you soccer better by providing parents some resources and support and guidance. But beyond that, I think I'm able to sort of coalesce the voices that I have as a coach, as a player, as a parent, as a club board member even, and bring those all together to develop a voice that is, as you said, revolutionary. I like that. I'm going to think of myself as a revolutionary person.
There you go.
I definitely am a bit of a disruptor. We're flipping the script and we're trying to, At Soccer Parenting, we believe that collaborative relationships between coaches, clubs, players, and parents is in the best interest of player development. And so we're starting at this point of collaboration. We're starting at a point of establishing trust in the coach-parent relationship. And so I'm not solely focusing on parents and guiding parents. The bulk of my time with Soccer Parenting is spent with coaches and club directors, mm-hmm. helping them rethink the coach-parent relationship and make parent engagement an active, useful tool that they have within their club or within their coaching experiences.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah, it can be a little misleading when you see the Soccer Parenting and the organization name, but yet the bulk of your work is actually taking place directly with these proactive clubs and organizations and coaches. So that's great to
hear. Yeah, it kind of feels like I'm using air quotes here, like the good guys. The good guys have all come together here. The level-headed parents, the level-headed coaches, the people that really are earnestly trying and working diligently to support players and make sure that players are inspired by their sporting experience. Those are the organizations that are gravitating to me. I sent out my newsletter this morning. I got this email from somebody that said, take me off the list immediately. And I'm like, well, one, you put yourself on the list. Like you subscribed to my newsletter. But I was like I was offended. I'm like, why don't you like me? Everyone likes me. Like the work that we're doing is like really positive. And, we're bringing people together. And he just kept coming back, unsubscribe us. I finally just stopped engaging with him. I mean, there are those people that we just can't quite reach. And that to me, it just doesn't make sense when somebody acts that way, because I really do so deeply believe that there is great value and power in these relationships and that parents will be a difference maker when it comes to improving the game. And so as coaches, we have to figure that out. And we need to, rethink, like I said, the way that we, what we believe to be true about soccer parents and find a place for them within our structures, within the youth sporting ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear, you can't reach all of them. And I'm sorry to hear you were offended. You should have explained to him or her that, hey, but I'm a revolutionist. I'm a revolutionist. You should have explained that to them,
I lost you for a second there. So sorry, I don't know. You froze for just a second, but I think
okay. No, we're good. There you go. Okay. No, I was saying, I'm sorry to hear, I'm sorry to hear that, you can't reach all of them and that you were offended. You should have explained to them that I'm a revolutionist. I'm a revolutionist.
I know that would have worked.
Yeah.
Well, we can't reach all the coaches. We can't reach all the parents. Right. Like there's some crazy parents out there. There's some crazy coaches out there. Exactly. We can let them all like play together and let's have our level-headed parents and coaches just unite and take back the sidelines.
There you go. There you go. You mentioned stress as a parent there, even though you're obviously more than well qualified as a coach. So I noticed you mentioned stress as a parent. And even though, you're well credentialed, well experienced in the game as a player, as a coach, you would have thought that it would have been not applicable as a, as it relates to you as a parent. But yet you did mention stress and your mission statement in there. It says, inspiring players by empowering parents. When you talk about stress, what is it that you felt as a parent when you say parent stress? And tell us a little bit more about that mission statement.
Yeah, for sure. It's only been in the last 3 years that I've really started realizing and talking about the fact that I probably started soccer parenting in large case because of the stress I was feeling. Back when my daughter was 8, 9, 10, 11, and all of this was kind of kicking off, I wasn't really cognizant of that. But now that she's in such a great place and enjoying her soccer and thriving and very inspired, I'm able to now look back, reflect, and actually kind of take responsibility for the way that I often interacted with her. You know, there was a lot of good and bad, and it wasn't just car ride home stuff it was just me putting too much pressure on her, me not letting her lead enough. And if Callie were here, she'd say, that's not true. But I know now that I look back, I could have done a better job. I hear that from parents a lot. They're like, I'm on my third kid and I finally figured out this soccer parenting thing. You know, so there's definitely layers to that. So the stress that we feel as soccer parents is actually, I think, kind of multifunctional. There's stress because we don't have the education that we need. We don't understand about long-term athlete development. We don't understand about the structures of, how kids acquire skill. And the, hopefully you can hear me, there's a train going by, but how kids acquire skill, or we don't have the understanding that we need about growth and how growth affects development. And so this lack of knowledge that parents have about, and I just mentioned three of probably 50 things that parents really need to understand as they're trying to support a child in their sporting experience, regardless of their level or their intentionality in the future of the sport. Parents just need this. So that's one layer of stress that has never been addressed really, and that I'm working hard to address. The other layer, and that was a lot of the stress I was feeling. The other layer of stress that we have is when our child is playing at the wrong level. This happens a lot in areas where there's only one soccer experience available for kids. It might be a small, and there's one team or maybe two. And so the child sort of gets sucked into either too high or too level high or low of a level based on their athletic mentality and their athletic potential. And so if there's a disconnect between the level that your child's playing, that leads to stress. The flip of that, some people might be thinking that, parents put pressure on their kids to play at too high a level. That would go into the parent education side of letting your child lead and all of that stuff. But just generally, if kids aren't playing at the right level, it's stressful. Or, you're traveling too much as a family and you don't want to go to that third tournament and the team's going, and that leads to stress. And the other primary place where there's stress is this whole concept of trust. And when there's not trust in the coach-parent relationship, the stress is very prevalent. And depending on your child's level of inspiration, it could even be more prevalent. So if your child's struggling and you don't trust the coach, that's just a very challenging situation. If your child's struggling, but you really trust the coach, that's another thing. You really trust the coach, your child's struggling, your child's inspired, but you don't trust the coach, that's stressful too. So, it's finding that right environment where you trust the coach. And so a lot of the work that I'm doing is around establishing trust and what it takes and guiding, instructing coaches on trust-filled relationships and what those look like, and talking to parents about that as well. This whole concept of sense of community that I'd love to get into it later, and how that falls into this concept of trust is important too. So I think those are the primary ways that parents are feeling stressed, and coaches too. We need to realize that they're, this is definitely bidirectional, the work that I'm doing. And then You asked about the mission statement. So it's, my mission is inspiring players by empowering parents. And, you know, more than anything, we want parents to understand the power that they actually have to ensure that their child is inspired. And they have this power if they're seeking education about the right things, if they are making sure they're in a trust-filled relationship with their child's coach, and, you know, if they're sort of making sure that they're making a good decision about their child's environment. So, you know, the concept is confusing to some people, of course, although it's changing. People understand a lot more what I'm doing now than they did originally. They all thought I was crazy originally. Now, for the most part, people understand this concept of empowering parents. It's not making them a helicopter parent. And parents received a lot of mixed messages, like, don't get involved. But it's actually making sure that parents understand exactly the right things that they need to be doing to support their child.
Yeah, that's great. I think, you know, you hit on two big things there. One, the level, in terms of the level of play of, you know, their child, which is, you know, sometimes you hit the nail on the head in terms of they may be limited, right, in terms of options. Mm-hmm. And excuse me. And the other one is oftentimes, I know there's parents out here, they're listening to this right now, and they're kind of wondering, you know, hey, Sky, Hector, how do I know I'm striking the right balance between not being helicopter parent or bulldozer parent, right? But also not under-involved, right? I could see that as stress, you know? So, because you obviously want to be involved. So yeah, those are two.
It's a really, really hard line to balance. I'm sure you feel that yourself as a parent. That's what I say when I reflect and I say, I could have done a better job. That's exactly what I'm talking about, is too involved sometimes, not involved other times. Like, just, I've really struggled to strike that right balance with my daughter, who was not like me. I'm highly motivated and I have a growth mindset, and and my daughter, who has given me much permission to share all of this, don't worry. But, you know, she really struggled with motivation and confidence and anxiety, based on environments that were really stressful for her, with yelling coaches and she just struggled there. And not very outwardly, but she just kept it all in, and it definitely affected her performance. And so it took me a while to figure that out and to understand that, since those are things that really never fazed me and in my athletic participation as an athlete growing up. So it is the biggest challenge. I mean, that's parenting, you know, trying to find that balance of trusting and trying and pushing and pulling and inspiring and demanding. And, you know, it's finding that balance, and it's no different on the soccer fields.
Right. Yeah. You know, I'm finding out now, having a teenager in the house, a recent teenager in the house now. My dad told me a long time ago, when my first one was first born, he told me, enjoy it now, because, you know, once they hit about 12, 13, you're not really their parent anymore. You're not parenting. You're kind of consulting at that point. Mm-hmm. And man, was he right. So,
yeah, well, yeah. And I like that. I might actually steal that and write an article about that. Like, you know, because I think that's really true with soccer too. I saw somebody post the other day, a parent post the other day, somebody said, like, how much should you help your child in their college search process? And the response was something like, the child has to want it more than you. And it's kind of the same thing here. Like, we can't force our children to fall in love with the game to the point where they want to go out and juggle every day, or they want it, whatever, you know, they think about it all the time. So we are just sort of consulting. We're here to support and guide and help and challenge, but really comes down to finding coaches you really trust, because we all know the great and amazing benefit and just how special that coach player relationship can be when it comes to inspiration and learning and guidance. And so that's really trying to seek those environments for our children.
Absolutely. And let the record show that I get marketing idea credit and royalties for anything relating to Revolutionary and consulting used by All right,
we're on it. You can write the article. There you go. I'll delegate that.
Don't give me more work.
Right back at you.
Okay, so kind of loosely related to what we were just hitting on, but it's kind of diving into, if you could identify maybe one trend, one or two trends maybe, and if you want to pick one positive, one negative, up to you, that's a trend that you're in this time with, since you've launched Soccer Parenting, an overwhelming trend that you see in the youth game regarding parents, whether it be a combination of club, high school, or one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so probably the thing that jumps out at me is this trend where parents are starting to recognize that there's more. Like, even me, when I started soccer parenting and I've coached, I didn't know what long-term athlete development was. I never even heard of that term before. In fact, for the first few years, I was like long-term athletic development. Like I was even using it wrong. I think though that there's much more understanding on the part of parents, awareness about those types of things. And I love to see that, because that's foundational to our work, is making sure that parents realize I have a lot to learn. And we still have a very long way to go with this, very, very long way to go with this. I would say it's a positive trend, but it's also like the largest way that parents can improve is to gain education on these things. And we have to be cautious, because when I started down this path, everything was parent engagement. I mean, excuse me, when I started, it was all parent education. And then we switched to this term parent engagement. There was this like general consensus on leaders across the country and the world even that, parents don't want to be educated. They want to be engaged. And I think that's a great term, but we have to remember that education is like a fundamental component of parent engagement. And so we have to, keep pushing hard on the education. But I will say that I'm starting to see that trend develop, that parents are seeking that guidance and education. That's fantastic.
That's great. That's good. That's great. Okay. So this one kind of, when I was getting ready thinking, okay, so many awesome things that I can ask, Sky, this one kind of came to me as it relates to me thinking a little bit of kind of my daughters as they're returning to play, right? Is what should, and I guess I'll explain why, is, as they return, I see on Twitter, I talk with enough parents and I talk with other coaches, and as student athletes start returning to play, especially on the club side, so much talk is about how rusty they're going to be, maybe not as sharp technically, maybe kind of out of shape, but very little is kind of mentioned on the confidence side or also the mental side. So my question really for you is, what should parents consider post-COVID, right? Once this is finally really kind of said and done, as their children continue to play and return to a new normal, is there anything out there you think parents should consider?
Oh yeah. I mean, a few things come to mind. One is just how essential it is that we keep our children moving. And there's ways we can do that. Like, I'm not comfortable personally, like going to a gym now. I'm not going to my yoga classes anymore. But I am working hard. Even if we're just here where I live, you can see I live in like a loft. You've heard the train. I'm like in the city, like I'm not in a very urban environment. We're like running up and down the stairs in our loft. We're like doing random exercises in quarters. We don't have a lot of space. So, I mean, we're figuring it out. And I think that even if you aren't comfortable, I mean, I think most people now are good with the kids getting outside with masks if they have to. We need to keep our children moving, because when we do get back to the fields, there has been a drop off, just like there's a drop off in school and learning, there's going to be a drop off in terms of how the kids move. And so that is something that we can work really hard. And it's really important for their mental health and our mental health. Like, you know, my son and I go for these walks and it's great. And, you know, we never used to do that together. So, you know, it's important that we do that. As the kids do get back onto the fields, you know, I hope that they're hearing feedback from coaches and club leadership. You know, every place in the country is different too. Some have been shut down so much, some like Richmond, we've pretty much kept going. So this isn't as prevalent of a conversation, but you know, that there'll be some thought around athlete development or how kids are getting back and putting in safety measures. I got so nervous when I saw some states, North Carolina in particular, I saw like they had a high school season, but they shortened it. So they had like 18 games in 4 weeks or something ridiculous. I'm like, oh my gosh. So we have to be really careful about our children and just their well-being. But I think overall, our kids getting back and rejoining their teams and having a moment, having these times where they can interact is just wonderful for their mental health. So it's a big positive if your family is comfortable with sending your kids back and you're able to do that based on your guidelines for the area.
Yeah, good point. All right, so as we start to transition here, any exciting future project or projects maybe that you can mention regarding soccer parenting, mm-hmm. or just something just in general? What can we expect from soccer parenting in the near future?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a number of really exciting things happening. Company's growing, I'm hiring people, and we're able to provide some what I feel is really useful and helpful content. We're just launching, really it will launch right as this podcast is launching, but we're just launching a Facebook group. And this will be for parents, coaches, club leaders, referees. This is like level-headed people, all get over here and let's unite there. So you can check out soccerparenting.com to find information about that Facebook group. And we're continuing to build out our content. We just launched a content space called Game Plans, where parents are able to engage with some of the learning and what is a really kind of a low-key fun way to engage with content. We have a game plan out right now about like motivation. And so it's sort of a step-by-step learning journey, if you will, for parents to go through about motivation and how that relates to their child and sport and how they can support their child when it comes down to motivation. So all of those things have been really excited and are been really exciting. And, you know, more than anything, what I hope to be true when I look back on this next year is to be able to say that we've continued to grow and to have more followers in terms of really creating this movement. And, you know, creating a movement is hard. It takes a lot of time and energy. I've been at this for 8 years and I feel like we're finally pulling in with some really positive momentum. But, you know, in order for us to have culture change, which is what we're seeking, culture change in our youth environment so that the focus is on the children and their level of inspiration, we have to really focus on our values, our beliefs, and our behaviors. And so that's what this movement is all about. It's positive, you know, working on these positive behaviors, making the right decisions, what we believe to be true about our children, about coaches, about each other, about referees. Like it's time for us to figure this out and really come together as a strong community. So, you know, that's what we're hoping, you know, we'll be able to see some tangible benefits, which we already are. Another thing that you asked before, what the positive trend with parents that I've seen. And I'll say that the positive trend that I've seen with clubs is just this amazing leadership that is now available to parents in clubs all over the country. You know, 20 years ago, our leadership in clubs was very novice. It was very oftentimes unqualified. I'm not saying, I mean, there've always been great people in the game doing wonderful things, but the trend that I'm seeing with club leadership is that executive directors, presidents, CEOs of these clubs are highly qualified, you know, great leaders, and men and women who are really in it for the right reasons and are trying to put a great product on the field for kids so that they can positively impact their communities. And so that's something that I've been really excited to see. And so I would hope right now we have about 130 club partners around the United States. My hope is that we'll definitely have 200 by the end of 2021. But that's going to require a lot of work on our part, just to build those relationships and onboard those clubs, but we're prepared to do that.
That's great. And for club, maybe club directors that may be out there listening right now, what is, so I know you mentioned, I was going to get to that later, but your membership partner program, if you can maybe in maybe a couple of sentences, what is that about? And for clubs that may be interested, directors of coaches, if you want to get more information, I know you mentioned soccerparenting.com. What does that entail and how can they get more information?
Yeah. Sure. So I've, in addition to soccerparenting.com, I have the soccerparentresourcecenter.com, which is a private membership site, and individual parents are joining or clubs are getting a club membership. And so when I'm referencing a club membership, it's that these clubs are making a great statement and saying that we believe that parents have value and we want. And so you have access, if you are a parent in our club, you have access to the Soccer Parent Resource Center. And so club partnerships are just $500 for the year. It's extremely affordable, which speaks to our mission of getting this to as many people as possible and making you soccer better, not making it more expensive. And there's other tangible benefits of being a club member for the leaders in terms of access to different training and webinars and coach education and such. And they can find that information at soccerparenting.com. There's a section there for club memberships.
Great info. Awesome. All right. Well,
yeah. I'm really, really proud of the site. I'm really proud of the information that we're providing and the community that we're creating. So I appreciate you asking me about that. It's been a ton of work to get all of this content out.
Yeah, it's a great site. I found myself thinking, hey, I'm going to go there for maybe 10, 15 minutes. And of course, about an hour and a half later, I was still finding all kinds of tremendous things. I was like, wow. So yes, very in-depth. That's kind of why I asked exactly. So, all right, Sky, this has been great. You've given us a lot of tremendous info. I know you're going to stick around with us for our next segment. All right, our counterattack segment where we get to have some fun with you. So for our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Sky Eddie Bruce. And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners at Physical Athletics. You can find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic, that's FYZICAL Athletic, as well as at their website, physicalathletics.com. All right, we're back. We're back with a very special guest here, Sky Eddie Bruce. I think she's a little nervous, a little bit on eggshells for this.
I am so nervous. I'm so bad at stuff like this. Okay, don't embarrass me.
No, this will be great. This will be great. All right, so all right. You ready to go?
I'm ready. Let's bring it on.
All right, okay, so first one for you. So we kind of go rapid fire here. So just, kind of by association, mm-hmm. what you can share. All right. Any pregame obviously you're also a coach. So mm-hmm. a coach or even as a parent, any pregame or postgame rituals?
As a coach, I use the exact same cones to set up my, I have pregame cones that are separate in my car in the truck. They're the pregame cones versus the practice cones. So that's probably, I don't know why that happened. I'm not really ritual. When I was playing, I had things that I kept with me in my glove bag. I had like a random card that Mark Doherty, who played in the MLS, gave me at a K-up, but I like kept it with me forever. So there was little symbols, if you will, but not really rituals other than somehow I've developed this coaching ritual of these cones.
Okay. Yeah. I have a pregame, I have a totally separate, one of those drawstring bags, a Nike drawstring bag where I have my, I think it's like 24 pre-game cones.
So, okay, you do the same thing. All right, see, we're aligning around that. I thought it was really weird. I wonder if coaches all over do that. And I just never knew that.
I bet you. I bet you, because we're kind of creatures of strange habits, I think, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Now, if not soccer, other sport you would have coached, maybe in a former life?
Basketball. I mean, I played basketball in college as well. So I played Division I basketball and Division I soccer, but I never played basketball before. I never know the rules. I just made the team because they needed basically somebody to knock everybody around at practice and piss everybody off. Sorry if I can't say that. No, so we developed a really strong mentality, and I could inbound the basketball the entire length of the court using a goalkeeper throw, which was a very novel concept in 1994 or 3 or 2, whenever this was. And so I got in the last minute, but I loved basketball. I often say, that could have been my sport. I love the physicality of it. I was the goalkeeper that was also the middle distance state champion. I fitness side of being an athlete is something that was really inspiring to me. So I think basketball, definitely, I love it. I love the intensity that it's 30 seconds left and you're behind by 6 and they still think you could win. I'm like, what? Yeah. I loved it.
It's great intensity, but I don't know. I mean, there's 30 seconds left and there's 17 timeouts. It takes,
I know.
People always say, people are always giving us a hard time about extra time, in soccer, but yet it's the last 2 minutes of a tight basketball game. Oh my God, it wears me out.
I know, that's true. You don't feel that when you're an athlete, of course, because you're in the middle of I might actually get in. Right. I was always excited then. But yeah, I feel that now when I'm watching, if I'm watching a basketball game, I'm like, all right, come on.
Right. Okay. So different one for you, similar but different. Other profession, if not a coach, other profession, if not what you're doing now, what would have been something else you could have seen yourself doing?
Urban planning. That's what I thought I would probably do. I grew up in Reston, which was this urban planning central area of the United States, the first planned community. My dad's an architect. I definitely feel I love the concept of reusing city redevelopment, those types of things.
Okay. Good. Wow, that's
probably cool. Weren't expecting that, were you?
No, it wasn't. I thought you were going to run with basketball again somehow, WNBA or something. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Time. Oh, well, I mean, if that was an option, WNBA was, I'm old. There wasn't a pro league for women. The MLS even started when I graduated college.
Right, right. Okay, so next one. So obviously we're, 11 months now into the pandemic, at least here. Favorite Netflix series or whatever platform you've been able to binge watch during the pandemic?
I have 14 more episodes to go of Vikings. Mm. Have you watched this? It's so intense. In fact, it's some crazy war scenes. I have to just shut it down and turn away because it's a little violent. But one of my new friends from the pandemic is Simon McAvoy from he's from Dublin, and he and I connected. He's a performance expert, and he and I connected and did an interview, and he was an extra on Vikings. And so he got me on all this, and oh my gosh, I mean, it's 8 seasons or something. I have one more season to go, to be honest. I'm like, all right, let's be done with this by now. But that definitely kept me going during some long winter days of isolation.
So that's an interesting one because, with Vikings, if you go back, because I know you are a hardcore supporter of the 50-50 podcast, right? If you go back to episode 7, we had Carol Walters, near and dear friend of mine. She's the head varsity women's soccer coach at Bernie Champion there outside of San Antonio. She said the same thing. She said Vikings.
She did?
Yeah.
I wonder if she sits around and braids her hair. I sit here and I put 30 braids in my hair all over because they're these awesome women, warriors. I love them and they've inspired me. So I'll go downstairs and I'll have circling braids and everything in my hair. I wonder if she does that too. Does she have long hair? I'll have to ask her.
Yeah, she was, you know, she says like, oh my God, it's like, I found myself Googling these things left and right about, did that really happen? Did that happen? And, you know,
Vikings. Oh yeah, the history.
Yeah, it's a show that I completely, I never got around to watching. It looked very good. I just never got around to starting it. And I think I got to get started on that. So 8 seasons then.
Yeah, it's fascinating historical fiction. Oh, that's my favorite books to read too, historical fiction, like London, all that stuff. It's pretty good. Okay. Outlanders.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, so now, so back to soccer here. Your favorite and least favorite soccer team, any level, foreign, domestic, college, what have you?
Mm-hmm. The Long Island, Sachem, whoever was our nemesis growing up. Their parents had cowbells and they were ridiculous and so intense on the sidelines. And we beat them, I think, every time, but I hated the parents. I don't know. Maybe that inspired me with the soccer parenting. Now I'm just thinking about that as I'm saying that. Definitely by far my least favorite team. can it be the favorite team I ever played for?
Sure. I mean, if that's
yeah. Favorite, so yeah. I was so lucky to play. We all dream as an athlete of finding that special team that just all comes together in this exact right moment and with fantastic leadership and great friendships. And I transferred and played my last season at George Mason University, where we lost in the national championships. And I was a first team All-American, MVP of the Final Four. Like, it was such an amazing way to end my collegiate career that up until then had been pretty frustrating because I had been basically splitting time with Brianna Scurry in goal for the previous 2-3 years. And so it was great. UMass made it to the national championships. They made it to the Final Four. They lost in the semifinals where I had played and where Bri was playing. And then we lost in the finals. So Bri and I separating was a good thing. But that team was so special. We just were there for each other in a really powerful way. And it's something I'm just so grateful that I could have experienced as an athlete, to be on a team where everything just works like that.
Well, there's definitely no shame in splitting time with Brianna Scurry, because I don't know if you noticed, she's pretty good, you know, obviously you were too. So, okay. So now non-soccer, favorite and least favorite non-soccer team, any sport.
This is where I go really bad. Okay. I don't want to offend anybody because I don't feel that strong about anything. I'm going to pause. This is me worrying. This is like me trying to be everybody's friend. Like, this guy this morning really bothered me. He didn't like me. Least favorite soccer team or least favorite team. I'm going to go with this won't please some people, but I'm going to go with Juventus, just because when I was playing in Italy, they came in for a game and I actually got to like be around some of the guys and I want to go with Juve, and because Udinese was the men's team where I was playing in Italy, and I became such a fan favorite of them. So I'll go with them. They were their rival of that season. So I just have this in my head. And then did you say my favorite team too?
Favorite non-soccer team.
No. Mm-hmm. Favorite non. Oh, was it supposed to be non-soccer? Sorry.
It's okay.
I didn't follow directions.
Okay, we got something. You're fired up about it. That's okay.
Okay. My favorite non-soccer team. I'm going to go with my son's favorite, Philadelphia Eagles. I've become a big Eagles fan with him this last year, watching every game. And it's been like trying to find the games on TV, not going into bars and trying to like figure out ways to watch every Philadelphia Eagles game. So I will go with them as my favorite.
Okay. Good. All right. So any hidden talent, secret?
That was supposed to be rapid fire. So long-winded rapid fire answerer.
And no, that's all right. That's all right. we'll continue. We'll press on. Any hidden talent, secret talent that not very many people may know about you?
I know sign language. I used to interpret for sign language. I went to a camp growing up where we learned sign language. There were 3 to 4 hearing impaired campers every week. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Secret
that's,
talent.
That's awesome. Okay. All right. So now it's not Vikings, but so this is a soccer, kind of soccer binge watching here. Assuming you've been able to watch all three of them, the All or Nothing Tottenham, Sunderland Till I Die season two, and Ted Lasso, which one and why?
I think the Sunderland Till I Die, I'll have to say. I just felt such like, I just experienced that on such an emotional level. And it was really cool just to really dive into like the promotion relegation and yes, to see that in a different way. I've really enjoyed watching Ted Lasso though. That's been fun for me, but I'll go with Sunderland Till I Die.
Yeah, they were all, for me, they were all different. Ted Lasso was the big surprise. I think Sunderland Till I Die season two was just, it was just brutal. You know, what you feel for the people in the organization and the town. And then, and you know, All or Nothing, the Tottenham, you just, some people who were kind of maybe had a fixed mindset on Jose Mourinho probably came out of that seeing him a little differently. So, Okay. here's a different one for you. Funniest moment you can recall working with a club or with parents, something you can share.
Oh gosh. That's right. Such a bad memory.
You don't have to mention names.
Oh no, it's okay. I'm not good with coming up with things. Funniest.
Or a funny moment that you can recall.
Probably this is going to go in a different angle than what you're saying, but it's not like a funny story, but just the interactions that I have with people, I just get so much joy out of them. Like, I love the fact that, you know, I'll go and I'll speak. This is obviously pre-COVID when I was out speaking a lot, but, you know, being able to get with a club and speak, and then the conversations that I can get into with the coaches or even oftentimes the parents afterwards. I don't know that there's like a funny moment that stands out, but just kind of like the joy that I feel from that, the laughter, those are important moments for me, and really bring home, some great lessons that I can reflect on and write about.
Great. Okay.
Sorry. That's not a good answer. I know, but that's the best you're going to get out of me. I'm really bad at remembering things. It's like, I need to keep a journal of funny moments or something.
Okay. Dog or cat.
Things funny happen to me. I just don't remember them.
All right. Dog or cat person, why and why?
Oh, I'm a cat person. I'm really a dog person, but I think I love having a dog. That would be great. But with my travel and my lifestyle, that just really wouldn't work. But I've never had a pet in my entire life. Like, I was a deprived child. Wow. Nothing, not even a fish. And we got a cat during COVID. We rescued a cat from the SPCA. Ramsey, he's been the best. What an incredible addition to our family. And he's brought us so much joy. So Ramsey, my cat.
All right. So that must have been a kind of earth-shattering, groundbreaking for you. That's a big adjustment, right? For no pet ever?
Yeah. Never. It's been great. I mean, I was like, what do I do with a cat? It's been great. My son's been begging for a cat, and I would love to have a dog, but like I said, I live in the city. It would be hard with my travel. Eventually I'll probably, now that I see like how amazing it is to have a pet, eventually I'll probably have a dog, but I do love my cat. I every once in a while, I like share photos and people think I'm going to turn into the cat lady. So I'm kind of hesitant saying that. Even I understand there's like there's some drama in that, but
yeah.
I can't.
Okay. All right. So final question. I asked this one to everybody. Post pandemic. You have the entire family over, friends are coming over, you're cooking for everybody. You're the chef. What are you cooking?
When is it? Is it winter or summer? This is important.
It's post-pandemic. Take your pick.
Okay, I need some clarification. I am cooking a meal that we will sit at a table for hours. Like, I'm taking, this is going to be an Italian meal. This will be the You know, maybe I'll even dive into my Italian recipes from the family that took me in when I lived there and find a recipe from the Nonna to bring out. But it will be a long meal where we sit at the table for a long time. We'll have some wine consumed and there'll be lots of food sitting on the table for us to just sit and enjoy each other's company all together. It'll be Italian.
Awesome. That's great. Yes, I'm very picky with Italian as well. And we'll have to talk more offline because I spent about 3 hours southwest of the Aviano Udinese area is where I lived. I was stationed there. And that's where I also played. I played semi-pro ball there for about 2 years, 2.5 years when I was there. So
that's great.
So yeah.
That Aviano base, Hector, that's where I would go to get peanut butter. Like so I, yeah. I don't know how, but there was a couple of guys from the Air Force Base at Aviano that came and saw us play. And then I went and saw them on the base and like got a stash of peanut butter from the PX there and stuff. That was great. It was like the only Americans that I saw the whole time I was there were these two or three guys from the Air Force Base. So I'm out of the base. I'm familiar with it.
Well, I was
so yes, offline. We could talk Italy.
Yeah. We'll talk more. Yeah, for sure. So Sky, this has been tremendous. This has been great. You're a good sport with the counterattack segment as well. And we really appreciate you being on the 50-50 podcast. And I'm a big fan of your work. Soccerparenting.com, I know, is the site. Any other information in terms of whether it's a club director, maybe even a high school coach or a parent, where can they, besides the soccerparenting.com website, and well, I shouldn't say besides because there's a ton of information on there. Where else can they find you or find more info on soccer parenting?
Sure. Well, I'm on all social channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Soccer Parenting. Twitter's probably the best place to reach out to me via a DM. But all of my contact information is on the site. And you can grab a 3-day free pass to the Soccer Parent Resource Center at soccerparenting.com. So check out on soccerparenting.com. And then you can check out all the content that's there. And I look forward to connecting with whomever. We are here to help and we're here to make you soccer better. So thanks so much for having me. This has been fun. I'm going to like text you later on tonight, a funny moment that I finally think of. So you're going to probably get a text at like 2 a.m. when I wake up and I said, oh, I should have said that. So be on the lookout.
I might have to record that and see if we can get a late edit. So awesome. This has been great. She's Sky Eddie Bruce, founder of the Soccer Parenting Organization, soccerparenting.com. And again, joining us via the Sun City Prep Academy hotline. Sky, thank you for your time. A pleasure to have you. Thank you.